Welcome to Hummingbird, conversations about creativity, arts, literature, and life with Catherine Graham and Jessica Outram. Hi, I'm Catherine Graham, and I'm coming from Toronto. We respectfully acknowledge that words and ideas have been shared on this land for thousands of years. The land on which we operate has been occupied by the Anishinaabeg, the Haudenosaunee, and the Wendat peoples, and is covered by Treaty 13 with the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation. It is part of the Dish With One Spoon territory and is still home to many Indigenous people. We pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. We are grateful to be here, connecting with others in the celebration of stories.
Last time we got into talking about gardens, and this time we're going to move into talking about trees. So we're hooked on the things that grow. I feel like we're going to be not just talking about all trees, but one very specific tree, the oak tree.
The Latin word for oak is quercus. And I realized that name actually, I teach at the University of Toronto School of Continuing Studies, and that's the name of our system for teaching online and utilizing things for the virtual word. And I thought, of course, quercus oak. So things connect.
Wow, that's a beautiful connection.
Mm-hmm.
So when we were talking about something a couple of weeks ago, it led us to a garden poem and then another garden poem. And then we talked about trees just with each other and thought that would be a natural place to go. And then we exchanged poems with each other via email. And we were surprised to find that both of our poems were about oak.
It wasn't necessarily a plan. As you say, we thought, let's explore trees. And lo and behold, these trees are oak, and they are talking to each other in our poems.
It's amazing how these branches, I think I stole that one from you. Catherine used that one a little bit earlier and I couldn't help myself. It was still
delighting me. You're allowed to steal. Go ahead.
But how the, the ideas are just branching out from one another. There's just so many different ways we could go, but we thought we'd begin today with Catherine reading her poem called Oak.
Yeah, and just thinking too about branches, I mean, the amazing thing about trees is that they stretch outwardly in the air, and then the beneath journey where the roots are spreading. And I think our poems often have roots to each other without us even knowing. And thankfully, through this correspondence and our journey as podcasters together, Jessica, we've discovered how these poems have roots towards each other as well. So I'll share Oak to start us off then. And this is a poem from The Celery Forest. Oak. If a lidded box doesn't announce death, a headstone will. Granite each visit, never bones, bones appearing as roots, just brush of wind, sun on hand. Leave stone for flower. But she keeps coming back. The casket won't close. A beckoning hand with gnarled fingers, roots from underground, refusing to go underground. Talk to her. Tell her. It's time. Stop haunting me. I can't sleep. You dream of trees.
Thank you so much for that. This poem has echoes of Gwendolyn McEwen's Dark Pines Underwater for me.
Well, thank you. I see that as a compliment. So I will graciously say thank you.
It is a compliment. And there's a heaviness, right? There's a pulling downward, focus on the roots and underground. And then the dreaming piece, the haunting, there's a mystery here. We kind of set the readers up a little bit because we said it was about a tree and it was about the oak. And it is about the oak, but just maybe not in the form that people thought it might be.
Yeah. And I think often when we explore something, an image, something that haunts us, and in this particular case, that's the case that something did haunt me. I guess I could give a bit of background to
this
poem. Yeah. So The Celery Forest is a book that explores the topsy-turvy world one experiences when they've been given an unexpected health diagnosis. In this case, it was breast cancer. And my mother died of breast cancer. So she accompanied me on the journey. I know I've talked about this in other podcasts, so I'll just refer to that quickly. But where this poem came from has a deeper source. And I remember after she died, it was my first funeral. It was my first experience with all the things that come with death. So it was totally foreign concept to me. And I remember there was a decision about whether it would be an open or closed casket. And it ended up being a closed casket because given the illness, that what it does, of course, it ravages the body and the person changes from who they physically were. Her essence was always the same though. And the light that came through her actually grew as her body changed and did what it did due to the cancer and consequences of that. But it was incredible, this light that came through her and brightened. And so that's really a lot of what I remember. The case was to keep it closed. And then I had this dream that I guess was more of a vision that turned to a nightmare, where I was in a room and my mother was in a coffin and the coffin was open and she was beckoning me to come towards her. And it was that sense of being pulled to the ominous and to something that you know feels dangerous, but yet can't be because it's the mother figure. But at the same time, there was complete fear and how she wanted to sort of grab me. And at that point, then I jolted awake. And it was I was scared. It's one of those breaking out in a sweat and your heart's beating and what just happened? And it happened again and again. And so it was suggested that I actually move into this dream when it happened again and talk to the figure, the mother, the corpse, whatever it was. It didn't feel like it was her, even though it looked like her. So because I knew she wouldn't haunt me, I knew that wasn't her purpose and her essence. So there was this strange sort of thing going on, pulling me towards this. And I had to sort of claim my own agency. And I did. And I just said, you know, much like the poem, stop haunting me. And more directly, I think I said, you're not my mother. Stop this. And then it stopped. It really did. That was such a huge moment in my life, in my sense of the inner outer world, in the sense of dreams, in the sense of moving into a dream to actually have some kind of space for your own voice to kind of move into that and have something happen that actually did have an effect of, in this case, not occurring again. So I've written about it. It's actually, it came up in a scene in Quarry, my novel. But these things that haunt us, even if we've sort of dealt with them, they still, I think, haunt us in a way as creators to want to be addressed in some shape or form through words, in my case, through poetry, through prose. And I think, too, about oak, how often coffins are made of oak, and we think of acorns. I recently learned too that an acorn is actually a fruit, not a seed, which I thought was fascinating. So the way too that can kind of fit with how something can look like something and the assumption that it is, in this case, I thought it was a seed, but actually be a fruit, the way that something can shift, even though it hasn't really shifted. It's just my knowledge that I wasn't aware of that and making that assumption. And then the sense too of transformation. In this case, the poem wanted to move from the sense of the mother and the coffin and the haunting and the underground to trees and sort of shifting to, I guess, as well, when we think of trees, we generally don't think about the roots. We think about the bark and the branches, as has been mentioned, and the growth and the beauty of what trees give us. And so that's a bit about the poem.
Wow. Well, there's a lot there just through the story that you shared in behind the poem and just thinking about that first experience that one has with death. And then for that to be someone who's so close to you, I can't imagine what that would have been like. And then to have that sort of a vision or a dream with that visit recurring, and then learning how to take control of that and seeing your own agency in that relationship is powerful stuff. Because I think that it's a thin line, right, between our world and the other world. For me, I feel that we're surrounded all the time. Like I feel surrounded all the time by my ancestors. So knowing when things are what they seem, or in the case of the story you shared aren't what they seem mm-hmm. becomes important learning as we grow up. And then being able to see, well, what is the action that I can take in order to set those boundaries? And thinking about the roots and the underground and how the tree wouldn't survive without those roots, wouldn't survive without that ground, right? And yeah. it's the same for us. We require the ground beneath our feet as human beings. It's just, there's so much when we start to think about the elements. And if we use the earth as the element of focus for today, when we think about that and the lessons that it can teach us and the places that we can go with that, it's really rich stuff. So thank you so much for being so open and sharing that story with us. And I would love it if you could read for us from Quarry and share with us the piece that connects to this.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Thanks, Jessica. And I guess too, I mean, I don't know if I would have been a writer if it hadn't been death that led me to that. So it's something that I know isn't always easy to address, not only in our daily conversation, but in our art, but I have felt pulled to it so that even when I do write about it, because I'm in the creative mode, I feel the life force rather than the death force, even if the death force is kind of pulling me to the various ways of how the poem moves in this case. But the life force is so big that it conquers it and it wants to make even with dark material, which I find fascinating because it's not like I have a choice in some ways. So I'll just, this little passage from Quarry. Caitlin Maharg is the protagonist and she is dealing with grief. She is dealing with the loss of a mother in this case. And she's having a conversation with her professor about loss. He says this now. "I know what loss is," he said. "It takes a long time. You're not sleeping, are you?" "I look tired?" "A little." And then I told him what had kept me up last night, Mom in an open coffin, trying to grab me. But I didn't tell him what I did afterwards, how I ate all the sticky contents of the last jar of St. Regis red jam, then shoved a finger down my throat. He raised his arms over his head, entwined his fingers. "Is it a recurring dream?" "It's horrible." I touched my face to cool the warmth there. "I can't believe I'm telling you this." His shoulders loosened as he rolled his chair toward me. I could smell his earthy cologne again. Or was it him, his scent? "May I suggest talking to the image? Enter the dream and confront it. Say something like, 'You're not my mother. She wouldn't do this to me.' Call the nightmare's bluff. Does this make sense?" "I think so." He picked up the paper. "Do the two disorders. No need to choose." "Really? Thanks." So that's just a reference to a paper. She was wondering which one, and now he says that she could do both of them. So I'll just move now to the next little part. "The next time the decaying body of my mother rose from the open coffin and the flesh-blackened hand attempted to grab, I didn't recoil with a silent scream. I pushed my voice into the nightmare. I talked to the dead. I couldn't wait to tell him. 'I did what you told me to do,' I said when I arrived at his office the following Tuesday. 'I talk back to it.' 'Good, excellent,' said Dr. Delio. He pressed his hands together. 'It hasn't come back since,' I said, shaking the snow from my hair, the first snowfall of the year. 'Closure,' he said, grinning. 'That's what you needed.'"
Seeing those two pieces and how they communicate with each other mixed with the story that you shared really, really brings all of that to life. The language that you use is just so powerful that I had goosebumps the whole time. And I was thinking about when I was younger and I would have these dreams, either dreaming of people who had passed or I would dream of somebody being in my room and how I was really afraid of that. And there's actually a couple poems in my new book, The Thing with Feathers, about those experiences and how over time I became more comfortable with that. And I've learned that it's just part of who I am. So I regularly meet people I know and don't know in my dreams. I'm lucky I get to spend time with my uncle or my aunt or my grandmother. And over time, I've learned to engage in conversation with them. And what a gift that is to be able to recognize that that's who it is in the dream, and then to be able to enter in those conversations and spend that time together. So as you were reading that, I thought of that transition that has happened too, that what was really scary for me over time with some guidance and with some help has really become a beautiful part of my dream world.
Well, I love that, Jessica. And just it's the ancestors coming to you and knowing they can come to you then in the way that you're describing it, and then seeing it in such a way. I think back to, just because of what we've shared in our writing, I think about that scene from Ether. Is it an omen or is it a gift? And you decided it was a gift. And how we look at it and through a certain lens, and then we can appreciate it in a different way, even if it can be scary, but we can push towards the gift and then realize what this is that we are receiving.
Mm-hmm. Because it's the unknown, right? And the other thing I was thinking was when I did my first poetry anthology in school, did you have those projects where the teacher invites you to write an anthology of poetry, typically in grade 12 or grade 13.
I wish I had a teacher that did that, Jessica.
I was blessed.
I was missing that.
Oh, I had just incredible teachers. And I think it was in grade 12 that I wrote my first poetry anthology. And I remember even where I was writing some of the poems, and I'll dig it out. I think I still even have it downstairs in the basement in a box. Yeah. And my whole poetry anthology was about death.
Right.
So it was a collection of 12 to 15 poems that I had written about death. And what an interesting thing to choose as a 17-year-old as a topic to move into.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I didn't really understand it. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what had led me to that day. There were things that were buried that I wasn't able to access within myself. Now, looking back on it, it makes so much more sense to me now. I can't help but wonder, too, if some of the people that I wrote about, I remember I wrote a poem about somebody who had passed in a drunk driving accident. And there was another poem about someone who had passed, like an older person. I think they were alone. Like, there was just all these different scenarios. And I can't help but wonder now if maybe they came in my dreams and they were people I had met and was, you know, trying to make sense of it all at the time.
Yeah.
And it came out through these poems that just had this mysterious pull for me. It's like they wrote themselves, much like there's a couple in poems in my new book, The Thing with Feathers, as well, that I call the grandmother poems. And
right.
In particular, the ones I think I've mentioned them here before, but not shared them. Maybe we'll get to that another episode. But in particular, spending that time with my one grandmother who grew up on the streets of Manchester. Well, great, great grandmother.
Wow.
Writing those poems as a teenager had that same feeling as writing those poems about her. And this is the beauty of poetry, isn't it? And arts, is that we can explore the things that are a mystery to us and try to better understand the story of being human through the expression.
I think through is really the key word there. We think about through even with trees, going through the roots, going through the bark, the sap, the life, the way it's also home for other creatures. There's so much life within a tree on the outward and inward level, and this whole unity of what a tree is. And I think too about how oak has been obviously a tree for me to move into with this particular poem that I shared, but you have a poem titled On Becoming a Tree, and I wondered if you'd like to share that, talk about that now.
I would love to. So this is why we felt like the poems were communicating with each other, because your poem, Oak, was very much about death. I think we can all agree. And On Becoming a Tree is very much about life. And maybe before I read it, I'll just tell a little bit of the story of the day that this happened. Part of my own healing journey included taking singing lessons. I needed to use my whole body to work through some complex things. And I'm a singer, and doing it through song where it's beyond thought, and I could just use song as a meditation to lose myself. And while I was doing that, working on the craft, but getting to a point with a song where I could let go of the song and just be in it and have that experience of being fully immersed, having my whole body light up with that music. And it wasn't for anybody else. It would be for me. And my amazing friend and singing teacher Marie, she has out her window this beautiful tree. And even her home has in the center of it, there's a, I believe it's in the center, but there's like a big, it's like a tree trunk through the middle of her beautiful home. And so you very much have the experience of being grounded like a tree and thinking about your feet as you're standing there as a singer moving through the ground and your toes spreading like roots, and then your arms and the notes climbing up high and reaching out and beyond where you could even imagine they could touch up into the sky. And I remember just spending hours there. I would go every Saturday morning and I would sing. And this was one particular day where it felt like one of those breakthrough type moments. And not in terms of how I sang the song, in terms of its technical abilities, but in terms of how I felt through the song, how my own inner healing had changed. And so this was a moment where I was standing there. She was playing piano. I was singing, I don't know exactly what song. It was always Ava Cassidy songs in those days. And I was standing there and I was looking out at the window and just singing all of this love into this tree out the window. And I don't know exactly what tree it was, but to me it looked like an oak. So I made it an oak in the poem.
Perfect.
On becoming a tree. She sings to an oak outside her window. Her song starts softly into roots and soil. Seed chords sprouting story, her toes stretch. Melody glides, crown to clouds, she reaches. Notes fall as leaves, rise as bees. She surrenders sound and self. Knees and elbows swing to ring in time. This sacred song heals as she transforms. Shoulders, now branches where owls land. She stands in one place, growing into presence, being enough right here as an oak.
Thank you, Jessica. In your description prior to the poem and then the poem, two words come to mind. I think of alignment, how you're describing that sense of being aligned into the song. Song is you, sense of all around you being part of what the song is as well. And then that sense of taking flight, although flight, I don't know if that's really the right word, but like the idea too of being lifted, but also grounded at the same time, which is what a tree is. And when I think about the sacred song heals as she transforms, the way that healing is happening as the moving into being or becoming something else is part of that. So again, that word through, so it's really about process, but how the song is part of that and how we need something that moves us. Even though a tree is, quote, standing still, it's really not. There's so much motion within it. And I know too, from what I've heard about people who know a lot more about trees than I do, that trees have their own sense of song and how they can communicate with how they sound with the parts, like the sap moving through them. Like there's sounds within a tree. And then of course we have the sounds that attach to a tree when the birds are, particularly this time of year, thankfully singing away as they move with concerns about territory and finding mates. And thankfully we get to participate in their journey by listening to their beautiful songs at our windows or wherever we are on our walks. But yeah, there's so much there in motion on becoming a tree, that way too, that I love how oak is the last word, because it really sort of places the poem, and sorry about the pun, but plants it.
Thank you. Yeah. And I've got both these poems out here on the table, and it's so interesting that oak is the title of yours. So it's the first word you see.
Yes.
And then oak is the last word you see in mine, and just those echoes. And I think about how death is so all encompassing, right? When someone who's close to you passes, you become outside of yourself, or you just so inside of yourself.
Either
way, but it's a completely all encompassing feeling. And this to me, on becoming a tree, is the flip side. It's that all encompassing feeling of being alive, those moments that we have that can be just as fleeting as the grief that can hit us, right? Like we know that intense grief, it will pass, but so does that intense joy. So making sure when you have those moments of that all-encompassing joy and connection, to really take notice of that and be in that moment, be grateful for that time, because we can't live in that intensity all the time, just like we can't live in that intensity of grief all of the time.
That's right. But they also too complement one another, and they're part of one another, and that I think they're, the grief is in the joy and the joy is in the grief. They're embedded in different places, just as these poems too, with the way that they're talking about death, which is also a kind of life as well, and then life, which is also a kind of death. Everything is sort of wrapped into each other, and it just makes sense when you think about the image of a tree, how it just visually does that with the underground and the overground, just in its existence.
You're so right. And one of the things too that I was often imagining, because I was grieving the loss of my uncle at this time, he had passed in that couple of years, so often when I was singing, I was imagining I was dancing with him. And I wasn't something that I purposefully set out to do. I would just see him in my mind's eye come to me often when I would be singing. And then we would start dancing and our feet would come up off of the ground and we would be up in the air and we'd be doing this like air dance thing together. So to add that layer to looking at this tree and to singing and just being, it's again like a meditation where you're just witnessing what's happening and yet experiencing it at the same time. That connection between life and death was right there, right? Because he was so much a part of that time.
Yes. And just listening to you, you may recall when I was listening to your poem and thinking about those two words, alignment and flight. Well, I wasn't far off then about picking up flight then, was I, considering what you just shared about where the poem came from and what you were thinking, because you were in flight with your uncle and moving off the ground into the air, which is fascinating now I think about why flight came into my head. So, I mean, there's roots in our conversations, as we know, Jessica, that help us kind of find things that we don't even know that we're aware of, but these connections are always available to us. We just have to spend time with them.
No, you're not too far off. And that was a common thing for me. That's how I know I've let go of a song while I'm singing it and I'm fully in it, is when I can see my body move up through the air and do that kind of air dancing. And it's such a beautiful space to be in, and you lose sense of who you're singing to and the audience, and you're just focusing like you would in a dream on the scene that's unfolding while this song is moving and vibrating throughout everything. And my incredible singing teacher was really teaching me how to imagine the inside like a big open space, and how even if I engage my knees and my arms and my hands in the song and got all of the muscles working, then what was really amazing is that the voice would come up effortlessly. And she's studied this really incredible method through Babette Leitner called Wholeness in Motion, that is all about that movement activating the voice and that openness, and how it's not just about the throat or singing through the head. It's about activating the energy that's within your entire body. There's something about that too, with that on becoming a tree. It was about that wholeness, that becoming part of everything. It's not just about my feelings or what I'm thinking, but it's what I'm saying and what I'm doing. And it's the feeling out that's connecting everything, right? And being in that moment of wholeness where everything is connected to everything else. Much like when I first studied Reiki and had those first few experiences with practicing Reiki, that was the feeling that I had. I felt my feet go down into the center of the earth, and I felt the rest of my upper body all kind of spread out. And this was just like the most fascinating experience for me, because it would just reach out and almost become part of that sky. And then I could feel part of all of the elements and all of everything. And for people who haven't had that experience, it's a very difficult thing to explain. But the best words I can use is that it's truly that wholeness, feeling that wholeness and that sense of connection in such a way that you're connected to everything all in that one moment.
And we are always connected, aren't we, when we think about it? I mean, everything connects to everything else. And I think too about how even a poem, that's why you can't just say what a poem is. You have to experience the whole poem. All the parts make the whole. The whole is holding all the parts. Everything matters within the poem to be the poem. Short form for a poem. It's just, you have to take it all, what it is, and experience all of the pieces too. And I think that's what I love about poetry too. There is no Cole's notes to the little shortness of it or take one word and that's the poem. It can't be done. The gift that we give ourselves to with poems is reading them aloud so that they not only are there on the page, but they take flight, just as you're describing. They take flight to be in the air and become something even more than what's on the page. So,
and as you said, they also go underground and look at those reasons or the stories when we refuse to go underground.
That's right. They will keep at us as
they,
they the beckon. More we refuse, the more they'll come knocking.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we're at the end of our episode.
I know.
And my wish for you is that you dream of trees.
Yes, dream of trees. You won't be haunted, promise.
And so we finish our chat with Just Another Day by the talented Shannon Linton.